Blog Talk Radio.
Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from Willow, Alaska, and on the line is Hugh Neff. Hugh, how's it going?
Hey, good morning, Robert. A little bit warm up here this time of year. For this time of year, it's about 40 above and sunny, but we still got plenty of chores to get ready for this winter, so we prefer it to be a little bit colder, but, you know, what are you going to do? You got to deal with whatever the weather's going to offer you.
I totally agree there, and I know on today's show we talked off air. You want to talk about some of this fall training and what is good and bad for the dogs, and of course talk about your upcoming tour in South Dakota and Colorado, and of course a Halloween party coming up in just a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, you know me, man. It seems like the more I age in this world, the more I'm trying to do, but it's a lot of good stuff, and I really enjoy setting up events that, you know, make a lot of people happy. And obviously, for me, the exciting event will be the Halloween party. Definitely going to Denver and visiting friends and Fraser outside of Winter Park is going to be fun, and Rapid City area as well. But Halloween's one of my favorite holidays, as it is yours, you know. And I think a lot of people would notice that I sort of treat every day like Halloween. I'm a bit of a character. So to dress up for the kids down there in the Abbott Road area of Anchorage and have a little Halloween party is going to be awesome. We're calling it Halloween, so it's actually going to – we're going to have contests for howling and costumes and stuff like that, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
And what day is that and what time and where exactly?
That's October 29th from 2 to 7 at Abbott Park. If people can – we're right now putting up a Facebook page for it. My friend Casey Ann Randall is organizing it. And she's a cancer survivor, great lady. Her and her family came up here about a month or so ago, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Looking forward to that. And before you head off to your school tour, I know you wanted to talk about some fall training. I know us here in our kennel, and of course all the kennels here in the Willow area, we're, you know, out and about on the ATVs, putting those miles on the pavement and those hard trails. You have some advice, don't you?
Yeah, chill out, take it easy. You ain't going to make any super dogs in one day. So, you know, when you're running the dogs, run it for the dogs and not for yourself. And if your dogs, you know, are into it and they're pumped up, don't go so fast. Nice, mellow pace. This is all just about conditioning and exercising this time of year. Too many people get all gung-ho about racing and stuff, and sometimes that's not to the you know, it's not good for the dogs. You don't want to be pushing them so hard when there's not much snow on the trail, because it's a lot tougher. The frozen ground or the hard ground is going to be a bit tougher on their joints and their bodies. So for me, if it's going to be like this, I want a little bit of water on the trail, a little bit of mud like my buddy Ray Reddington has down in Kinnick. You don't want to have too much. It can get a little bit tough on the dog psychologically to have to go through it. But who knows, man, in some of these races, Iditarod or Cusco, Quim down there in Bethel, you're going to see open water from here and there, so the dogs have to get used to it eventually.
So what is your advice for the up-and-coming guys on this ATV training? You know, people always talk about going slow and steady. What do you think about miles? What should a mid-distance musher, you know, doing, you know, Kinnick 200, those types of races, 200 and 300 miles, what should those guys be doing on the ATV this early in the season?
Like, I worked for a guy named Patty Santucci a long time ago, and he's an old Quest musher, really knowledgeable guy, and he would always tell me it's really not about miles, it's about time and harness. And I had a really fun morning so far. I was on the phone with Eskimo friend, Ray Reddington, who's part Eskimo, and then at the same time I had a buddy of mine who's almost like family, Carl Earhart, visiting, who's an Athabascan from Tanana. And so we were almost having a chit-chat, you know, about dogs and stuff and just philosophies. Ray uses his engine on when he's driving a smaller team where I don't use the engine at all and I run a bigger team. And there's pluses and minuses to both. But what Carl mentioned to me, which I thought was very interesting, is he was talking with Marvin Cochrane, who's one of the best sprint racers ever. And Marvin was talking about how you're not really training their bodies to be better. You're training their minds to be smarter. And I think that's what every musher should do when they're out there on the trail with their dogs is, you know, trying to develop not only a bond, but your own unique type of communication with your animals. And that way you're not confusing them when it comes to race time because they're used to a habit that you've developed in your training system.
You know, I know John Baker says that you should keep your dogs in one position and pretty much leave them there. What's your opinion on that in these early season training runs? Do you do a lot of switching around from leader to swing to wheel to team, et cetera?
Yeah, and that, I you know, respect John more than pretty much every other musher I know. John's an amazing dude, as well as his cousin Joe Garney. Anyhow, we all have philosophies, and worked for John. The beauty of it is I've got a bunch of John Baker dogs. They're all about 2 years old. They look like his winning team, the slick black coat with a wolf-like demeanor, and I've tried them all in lead, and I'm rotating them all around, and I got a litter of seven that I got from a dog from John named Effie that we bred up with a dog that I have that's out of Annie, my old leader, and a Hans Gott dog named Tank. And out of these seven puppies that are going on 2 years old, six of them are leaders, and I mean good leaders, the type of leaders that don't even look back. And those are hard to come by, so it makes you wonder about genetics sometimes. And I'm just really happy how that litter turned out. But I always mix it around. I call it musical chairs. And with John, I would agree on the point that maybe in races you don't want to do that as much. You want to keep them in a position they're familiar with. But in training, I want to experiment and see what these dogs are like. And I don't necessarily put these dogs up in lead for very long. I just want to give them a glimpse and see how, if they're into it or not. Because when you find a leader that's into it, that's a wonderful feeling. And you're going to come back from that run feeling really happy.
I totally agree there. We're looking for some of those younger dogs as well that they're just shining up there in that lead position. What about the older
dogs? Hard to
dogs?
Tell, though, in training, though. I mean, until you go, I'd say, over maybe 25 or 30 miles, that's when you're going to start to learn a lot more about your dogs. But I'm not about to run that far this time of year. For me, it's just more day-to-day consistency.
I agree with that. What about the older guys who are used to being in one particular position and then they're forced, you know, back further in the team, whether it be from speed or just training up those younger guys? Do you agree with that, or do you agree just to leave those guys home and run them all together?
Definitely the older dogs. I'm not going to put as many miles on them. They do a lot more free running and just playing in the yard. But like I was telling people on my talks in Germany here last month, that it's very important to start off your run on a positive note. And that's why I like to have experienced leaders up there as we're leaving the yard. I've got to cut across a couple side streets to get out to my trails here in the back of Toke. So I want a nice dog that I can depend on. And I don't tie out my leaders like you see some people do. I want my leaders to be anchors that will almost just lay down up in front there. And so I've got dogs like Walter and Tolliver and Rocky and some of my older veteran guys or girls that I'll put up in lead for the first couple miles, and then I always stop my team and give them a little breather and a pee break 10 minutes into the run. So I'm going to go up there and switch them out with some younger dogs that have mellowed out from the beginning. And then we'll start doing a little bit of musical chairs. But on a training run, I'm stopping all the time when it's warmer. I mean, you have to. You just can't be running these dogs nonstop when it's warmer than 15 above out. They need breaks here and there.
Last question in regards to fall training, Hugh. What about snacking or watering on the trail? Are you doing that? Are you a proponent of that, even on these shorter runs? Or do you just wait till you get back?
Very good call there. Yeah, so we did it the other day, and it was just sort of a waste, you know, because there's only a few miles left, and you're just putting food into their system that by the time they get back to the yard, it's actually going, they're getting that energy all of a sudden. So you're just wasting the food, really, because then they're going to be all pumped up by the time you get back and want to start running again. If that's your game plan, then you could probably just turn them around. And I know people that do that as a training device. They'll pull into their yard and stay for a little bit and then leave again, get those dogs used to going through checkpoints and races. But for us, we're doing a lot of what you said at the end of your last sentence, Robert, and we're brothing them right when we get in. We want to get them to get that habit, you know, of getting something in their system within a half hour of when they're done with exercise. It's very important in racing. They need that. And so we're always going to broth them and get them used to drinking with the other dogs and not trying to steal food and having good manners and all that. And it takes a lot of repetition and practice because there's always going to be a dominant dog that's going to want to get into both of the bowls. Or that's why you have to, as a musher, figure out which dogs are going to be good next to each other that are going to, you know, their habits are going to mesh together properly.
Excellent questions, excellent answers there on Fall Training 101 here on the Gypsy Musher. So this weekend you're heading down here towards Anchorage, heading out south to South Dakota and Colorado for, I guess it would be your fall school and speaking tour, right?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to going back there. I've got one of my best buddies that I grew up with in Boy Scouts. Tim Rubel lives in that area in Golden. And excuse me, but I'll be Jeff Martin, who I haven't even met yet, just through the powers of this radio show, listened to us last 2 weeks ago and notified me that he'd like to set something up in his area, which is called Fraser, out by Winter Park, I believe. And so we're going to be having a get-together at Hernando's on the 22nd. It's going to be a dinner, book signing. We're even going to have a little fun with some mini poker tournament afterwards, I believe. So that'll be a lot of fun. Looking forward to meeting Mushin folks in Colorado. I know there's a lot of them. My buddy Guy Henry lives in Colorado Springs, and he's actually going to be following us around this racing season. We're going to be putting together a little documentary. And the neat thing about this documentary is it's going to be all from the dog's perspective. It's not going to be about this musher or that musher. It's just going to be a dog's view of things. And I think that's going to be really neat. So Guy's going to be accompanying me on all my talks, not only in Fraser, but I'll be doing a book signing in Colorado Springs area the following weekend on the 28th, which is a Saturday. And then I'll be in Rapid City in between doing three or four school talks with my friends, the Prices, Amanda Simonson Price is setting that all up. And we'll be doing a book signing as well there. So it's going to be quite the week, but you know, for me, I'm always trying to give back, and not only give back, but raise money so I can keep racing. A lot of people think I'm rich for some reason. They don't realize that I'm still coming up with money to sign up for races. So that's the beauty of being me, though, is I'm racing against all these famous mushers who've accomplished a lot more than I have, but I can still compete with them because it's not just about money if you want to be a good dog musher. It's about having the passion and knowing what you're doing.
So you mentioned a poker tournament. How does that go? Are you an avid poker player?
Oh, not really. I tell people I don't gamble at all. Being a dog musher is gambling enough.
but people can get in on that tournament and play along with you. Is there money involved or is it just a donation towards the cause?
Yeah, I think it's all just a good cause, and like I said, I've never really met too many Colorado mushers before, except for my buddy Bill Pinkham, who I've done the quest and I did ride with. But, you know, there's definitely a tie-in. You're from there, Robert, and there's a tie-in with dog mushing in Colorado. Susan Butcher ran dogs there, and, you know, throughout the years there's been various Colorado mushers that have come up and done Iditarod and Quest. So I'm definitely looking forward to meeting some new mushing friends when I'm down there.
You know, Hugh, you're heading up towards Winter Park. We used to drive all the way on the other side of the mountain, all the way down to Denver and back up on the other side to get to Winter Park. That's the only place we could find snow. We used to run all of our dogs right there on those trails near Winter Park and Fraser. So, yeah, there's lots of trails around there, lots of good mushing. And the guy that you're going to see, he runs a tour company there in Winter Park. Is that right, for dog sled rides?
Yeah, I'm trying to look it up right now if I could tell you what the name of it is. But I'm actually, his name's Jeff Martin, and I'm going to be doing rides at his place on the 22nd as well, if people want to come on out. And for me, I think if I was in people's shoes and they're looking to have a good time, I would advise coming out to his place and checking out the his dogs and just being a part of the scene, because that's when I feel where I'm at my good spot in life, is when I'm in a dog yard, whether it's mine or somebody else's. I just enjoy the atmosphere of the dogs and what it's all about.
Do they have any snow up there in Winter Park? I know it's pretty early still for that neck of the woods as well.
Yeah, I think so. The name of Jeff's company, by the way, is Dog Sled Rides of Winter Park. He showed me some pictures from last week. It looked like he had some snow in his kennel, but you saw the Denver game yesterday, and it warmed up, and it's warm here again, so all of our snow is gone. Even though when we drove back from Fairbanks yesterday, there was snow by Johnson River, where Sonny Linder has a place. So there's snow around Tok. Unfortunately, there's no snow here in Tok. But I'm hoping by the time I get back from Denver, we're going to load up the whole yard and head up the Taylor Highway and set up a little training camp and stay up there for a few weeks and get down to business.
Is there quite a bit of snow up there already on the Taylor, or they're still kind of waiting it out as well?
Yeah, depending on I drove up there a few days ago, and here and there they're still maintaining the road for a few more days. So until they're done, we won't know. But here and there, there's definitely snow everywhere. But it's thicker as you get higher up, obviously. So Mount Fair Play has a decent amount.
So let's talk a little bit about...
It's the hills. Where I am in Tok, it's sort of flat, so I need to get up there because that's really good hill training.
Let's talk a little bit about winter conditioning, from going from fall to winter. You said when you get back, how long does it take dogs to transition from that monotonous ATV training to the sleds and really getting them rocking and rolling? Do you think that that's a multi-day process, especially for the younger dogs, or do they just pretty much know what's going on?
Yeah, like you were saying, it's all dependent on age and experience. I remember talking with Ed Eaton, a phenomenal musher from the Kotzebue area, came in second in the Iditarod, and he told me one year that one of his best Iditarods, he didn't even start on a sled with dogs until like December, doing his serious training. But I have a feeling he probably had a fairly experienced team that year. So if you have a younger team, like I do, there's a reason why I'm putting more miles on, is because they need it. But that being said, if you're going to do that, you have to definitely keep an eye on their pads, making sure they're not muscling up too much. Obviously, if they're not eating well, that's a sign, or if they're getting finicky, that maybe they need to have a breather. But that's how I like to train. I'll do a bunch of days in a row and then give, you know, 2-3 days off, and let them do some free running around the yard and stuff. But the younger dogs are definitely going to need a lot more overall training than the older dogs. And that's why I like to get out on the road with them. I'll throw them in a truck and drive to wherever the snow is. And the more experience you can give the younger dogs, the better, I think.
I totally agree with that. So, Hugh, the question of the day, I see it pop up quite often on your Facebook page, or at least other Facebook pages, when people are talking about Iditarod and Quest. And I know you mentioned finances as a motivating factor, but when in the world are you signing up for the big boys, the Quest and the Iditarod?
Oh, well, hopefully I'll sign up for the Iditarod when I get back from Denver. That's obviously a big part of why I'm doing this, so I can raise money. I mean, I just spent over $1,000 in the last couple of days and roofing materials to finish up the handler cabin, and bought $1,000 worth of meat. So I want to, and we also are purchasing a few new sleds from my buddy John Schandelmeyer, 2-time Quest champ. So I wanted this year to be perfectly having all my T's in order and I's dotted, and before I signed up for races. I think that's being prepared, you know, it's what they teach you as a Boy Scout, and I want to make sure we're all set to go. And, you know, Nicole's already signed up. She's doing great on sponsors. She just got a big sponsor from the Fairbanks area, the Howling Dog Saloon, and we got to visit with them, and that's a big deal. We were really excited for her with that, and she's got a lot of people that are looking to help her out. Our friends from the Fairbanks area, Joanna and Sage and Leah and a bunch of girls are helping to promote her and Riding Hood race page. But for me, you know, I'm not a pretty girl, and people think maybe this guy's so successful he doesn't need help, but I'm still scratching like I was 20 years ago just to make it to the starting line. And I enjoy it that way. I want to earn it. I don't want to be given anything. And that's why I always tell people, if you're looking to sponsor me, I don't want your money. I don't want charity. I want to give something back to your company or you as a person. And what can I do to help promote what you're about? And that's what I'm looking for in sponsors. So I'll be signing up for that race, the Iditarod, right after we get back. I'm definitely motivated for that race this year. Going to Norway was great, but I definitely missed being on the Trail of the Gnome. The quest I'm going to hold off on. I'm hoping in the back of my mind that if some of these Iditarod mushers who think they're, you know, can just show up to a race and win, think that I'm not doing the quest, that maybe one of them will get off the fence finally and sign up for the quest. And then once they're signed up, I'll probably be signing up, you know, at a later date. And I think Mr. Sass and Mr. Moore and myself and a few others might show them a thing or two about what being a overall great dog man is about, because Iditarod's a great trail and all that, but the quest definitely tests your mettle a lot more as far as the trail conditions. The Iditarod coast can be quite brutal, and I've learned that over the years, but the quest is quite difficult in its own regard.
You know, Hugh, you mentioned something on our last show. You said that people shouldn't run out and sign up for races before their dogs are taken care of, you know, before the meat's in the freezer and the booties are bought, et cetera. That's great advice for those younger mushers who are just busting their butts to get those entry fees in so quickly. I think that's excellent advice. But my question to you, Hugh, is what about we talked a little bit about this before. How can people wait these days when they're filling up so fast?
Yeah, that's the catch 22. And I don't know. It's tough, man. And I don't know. Luckily, we're getting a few more races going. They're doing the Top of the World. Nicole and I are going to be racing in that. And I know you're trying to get a race going, the Independence Mine. And with these musher limits, it's tough because, you know, if a lot of these mushers sign up and then withdraw at the last second, all these kids like, you know, Ben, who works for my buddy Ray Reddington, who's trying to qualify to do Iditarod, they're left out in the dust because it's too late for them to sign up, or else they've got a different schedule set up. So sometimes having the musher limits, I think, is tough on the racing scene. It's too bad we couldn't figure a way to have different levels, perhaps, where they send out 20 teams at a time or something. I don't know how to get around that situation. But it's definitely tough when mushers that deserve to be a part of races can't because of unfortunate circumstances. And you never know the way the weather is. We could have one of those years. My first year in Alaska, I didn't even get on a sled. It didn't even snow until the second week of January. And I was coming up from Chicago wanting to live the dream and be a dog musher. And I'm sitting there running dogs on a four-wheeler for months at a time, you know, and it definitely isn't very fun after a while. I'd much rather be on a sled.
That's what mushing's all about, out there on that sled. So, Hugh, we have about 5 minutes left. What else is on the tap?
Oh, right now it's just about running dogs. My buddy Damon just put a new set of brakes on the four-wheeler, which is nice because Lord knows we've been using them a lot. For me, I learned this from Sebastian and some other mushers, is the brake is your friend. Use it to make your dog team even more powerful. Too many people are just thinking they're, you know, Egil Ellis sprint mushers just going at it. And that's not what long-distance mushing is about. It's about habits and consistency and patience and a nice, mellow momentum. You don't want to be going too fast out there. It's not good, especially when there's not too much snow on the ground. And what's the point? Save the racing for when the race is, not for in training. So besides that, you know, just got a new calendar coming out that's that people can check out on HughNeffGypsyMusher.com. That's pictures from the book and some other pictures. The book sales are doing great. Hoping to maybe do a book signing in Fairbanks sometime this late November, possibly, as well as we're talking with the Quest over in Whitehorse about setting something up over there as well. So I think the book for the newer mushers, I'm not being a blowhard. It's really not about how to be a great champion or all that. But for my book, I wanted to not only be something that school kids could learn from, but also newer mushers or just the general racing fan. So it's really just my thoughts on how to create the mushing magic in your own yard. And that's really what it's all about, you know. It's about creating a picture. I always tell people it's not about being an athlete. It's about being a painter, and you're trying to create a beautiful picture. And if you have that dog team coming in to checkpoints or at the end of a race where all the people on the side of the trail, especially the veterinarians, are just sort of blown away and they're looking at your team like, you know, that's a thing of beauty, then you know that you've done well.
The Bob Ross of mushing, then.
The what?
The Bob Ross of mushing. You know Bob Ross, the Pretty Little Trees guy.
Yeah. I know who that guy is. No, I'd say more like the Pablo Picasso.
There you
I'm
go,
a little Bob bit more Ross. Surreal.
Well, Salvador Dali, then.
Oh, there you go, Salvador Dali. Good call, dude. But, yeah, life is good, but, you know, it's crazy, and I'm definitely sleeping hard at night because we're just going at it from morning till night, and it's good, though, because we know that we're giving back and we're making a lot of people happy, and people are enjoying not only the racing but just the whole adventure of it all, and that's really what I'm all about.
Speaking of being part of the adventure, just a couple of minutes left. You mentioned a little while ago about the bed and breakfast / handler cabin. I saw a picture on Facebook. Man, what a transformation from the last time I was up there. When I was there, it was an entirely different scene up at your place.
We're looking forward to it. John and Ken have been working on it, and people are more than welcome to get a hold of us if they want to come in a couple months or, you know, whenever down the road. We'll set up all types of tours from just a few hours on the trail to an overnighter, or if you want to stay for a week, whatever. We'll be able to start giving tours, I'd say, in mid-November. And I think it's a great getaway for people in the Fairbanks or Anchorage areas, too, if they just want to get away for a couple of days on the weekend. We've had many visitors here within the last month alone. And, you know, there's plenty of good places, Fast Eddie's, and there's a Thai food place, and there's shopping and stuff around Toke as well for winter, Christmas gifts and stuff like that. So Toke's a nice little getaway for the weekend if people are very interested.
Well, I'm looking forward to it because the next time I come up, I don't want to have to sleep on that futon again.
Yeah, we actually, our friend Joanna just we just bought a mattress from her, and our other friend got us some beds, Janie. So we're getting that all set up, and my dogs are barking, so it looks like we're about ready to go on a dog run.
There you go, Hugh. It's been a pleasure. We'll talk again next time. HughNeffGypsyMusher.com, where you can buy the book and find out all the news about what's happening over there at Laughing Eyes. Hugh, we'll talk again soon, okay?
All right. See you later.
All right. Take care. Hugh Neff. Talk to you guys later. Goodbye.